a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. Today is Father's Day, the day that celebrates, or at least tries to, the nature of fatherhood. Fatherhood in our society today is something that is often maligned, and men in many ways are considered to be at the heart of the troubles of the world. So if you have a father and you love him, tell him so today. I'd like to approach the subject of fatherhood from a little different sense than I've ever approached before in this program. Like to talk about earthly fathers, but also our Father in heaven. Jews, Christians, Muslims all believe in some sense that we are the children of God. But in what sense is that true? The answer to that question varies widely. How is God our Father? Christians believe Jesus is the Son of God, the Son of Mary, and they believe that in a very direct and literal way. How direct and how literal, I guess, depends on the denomination, but Jesus is literally the Son of God, other than in a few denominations which see him as being adopted. In what sense are we, the rest of humanity, God's children? Is that because we are his spirit children? Is that it? Not that that's not a lot, but what exactly does that mean? There are a number of different ideas about that. And there are some clues in the scriptures. One of those is found in an often overlooked set of verses in Luke chapter 3. If you start in verse 23, you will find the earthly genealogy of Jesus, and that's the reason it's usually cited. But today I'd like to cite it for a little bit different purpose. Focus on Adam at the very end of this. As you go along, it talks about Jesus, and then it lists many of his progenitors, and then it says, who was the son of Methuselah, who was the son of Enoch, who was the son of Jared, who was the son of Melalel, who was the son of Canaan, who was the son of Enos, who was the son of Seth, who was the son of Adam, who was the son of God. Is Adam literally the son of God? If so, in what sense? If this is only figurative, then in what sense are we God's children? Maybe it just means that Adam has no earthly father. But I think it means a lot more than that. Paul said in Acts chapter 17 in verses 26 through 29. This is my translation because it's a little more direct than the King James. Quote, God has made of one blood or species all nations of humans who live on the earth, so that they should seek after God. And if they find him, and they should, because he is not far from us, then they will know that we are his offspring. Just as your own poets have said. So if we are the offspring of God, we should not think of God as something like gold or silver or some piece of art. We should think of him as like us, or rather we should think of us as like him, close quote. Now that's a literal translation in some parts and loose translation in others, but you get the idea. God's name and character is something I wanted to also touch on here. For many, there's this great raging debate of how you pronounce the name of God. For the Jewish people, YHWH, Yahweh, is the most holy name of God. It was written in the ancient Hebrew language without vowels. Because of this, there's no agreement on how it's supposed to be pronounced. Many academics pronounce it Yahweh, and that's sort of the standard traditional approach, so that's why I typically adopt that pronunciation. It's also been pronounced Yehovah as a substitute word for the Tetragrammaton. The Tetragrammaton is the Greek word for four letters. The gist of it is that Yahweh, YHWH, has four letters, and so Tetragrammaton is the Greek word that designates that or that describes that. So we have all kinds of things, Adonai, Yehovah, all kinds of different ideas about what God's name happens to be. There's raging debate on that. Among Latter-day Saints, people talk about Elohim. That's actually a plural word. We tend to use it just for designation purposes as the name of God. Traditionally, this is something that can be found in the Old Testament. Elohim occurs about 2,500 times or so in the Old Testament. Yahweh occurs way more than that, 7,000 times approximately. And Yahweh was spoken of often by the Jews in the New Testament era. Yahweh is also present with the expanded name of Yahshua, or Jesus, or Joshua, Moses' sidekick there, in the meaning Yahweh saves, or Jesus' name literally means Jehovah saves, or Yahweh saves. But there's this odd kind of idea about what that name means and how it should be pronounced and what's God's name. I have some ideas on that I'd like to share with you. In ancient Jewish tradition, your name and your character were interchangeable. In other words, your name was your character. Your character was your name. We have a sense of that today. If there's someone who you have great respect for and you hear their name, the idea of who they are comes immediately to mind, as it should. If you similarly have someone you don't have such great respect for and you hear their name, that idea comes as well. So your name comes to be synonymous with your character. That was true with God and with those in ancient Israel. Often their name with the prophets meant their character or their calling. And that's also true with God. Exodus chapter 9, verse 16 reads like this, "That my name may be recounted throughout all the earth." Now, many who hear that think, well, what that really means is that everybody should hear the name of God everywhere throughout the earth. My take on it is that it has very little to do with the actual name of God, but with God's character. I would retranslate Exodus 9:16 this way, that my character might be recounted throughout all the earth. The point here is that if we understand the character or the nature of God, just as Joseph Smith told us we should in his last great sermon, the King Follett Discourse, we would all become far, far better people. So what is God's character? What should we do if we want our character to become like the character of God? That will be my focus on the other side of the break on this Father's Day. I'm Martin Tanner. Stay tuned. This is Religion Today. We'll be right back after this break talking about the nature of God on this Father's Day.
Religion Today with Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. If you'd like to learn more about this subject, feel free to send me an email. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com. If you have a question or comment about this or any other religious question or subject, send me an email. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com. I will do my very best to respond as quickly as possible. And I enjoy your questions, so feel free to send them. Today we're talking on this Father's Day about the nature of God. And just before our break, I mentioned that names and character were synonymous. Isaiah's name means something very specific. Talks about Jehovah saves. Yeshua, Joshua, Jesus, those all have that same idea that deity, that God saves us. And in Exodus chapter 9, verse 16, you have this idea that says that my name might be recounted throughout all the earth. I suggested that what God really wants is for his character to be recounted throughout all the earth. Here's another place where I think you can derive that idea. If you take a look at Numbers chapter 6, verse 27, with this philosophy or this Hebrew idea behind it, you would instead of, "And they shall place my name upon the sons of Israel, and I will respect them." Instead of that, you would read the following, quote, "And they shall place my character upon the sons of Israel, and I will respect them," close quote. The sons of Israel would be respected because they had character like God's character, not because they had a name. We should focus on the character of God, what he is like, what he wants us to be. That is the focus. What do we know of God's character? In 1832, in the earliest known, at this point anyway, recount or retelling of Joseph Smith's first vision, he had this to say, quote, "And while in the attitude of calling upon the Lord, I saw a pillar of fire," and that's crossed out, it says a pillar of light above the brightness of the sun at noonday, "come down from above and rest upon me. And I was filled with the Spirit of God. And the Lord opened the heavens upon me. And I saw the Lord, and he spake unto me, saying, Joseph, my son, thy sins are forgiven thee. Go thy way, walk in my statutes, and keep my commandments. And behold, I am the Lord of glory. I was crucified for the world." And then I'll skip a little bit, and towards the very end it says, and this is Joseph Smith talking, of course, "And my soul was filled with love for many days. I could rejoice with great joy, and the Lord was with me." Now, a couple of points here. The first one is that God knew him. God knew everything about him. God knew his name. God forgave his sins, and God loved him. His soul was filled with love, and his sins were forgiven him. Now, the other point of his going to inquire about God was which church was true, and he was told not to join any of them. So God gave him love, forgiveness, and knowledge. Those are the 3 points of the first vision. Knowledge not to join any other church, forgiveness of sins, and that he was filled with love. That's a powerful, powerful idea. And there are many others who have had experience with deity who have this same idea. I've been blessed to know a number of them, in large part because of this radio program. One of the most fascinating, who I interviewed many times, but a long time ago, because he passed away now, 13 years ago in 2007, is George Ritchie, the author of the book Return from Tomorrow, and a sequel to that, My Life After Dying. George Ritchie was not a Latter-day Saint. He was Presbyterian. But he had this fascinating near-death experience in which he learned many of the doctrines and ideas about God the Father and about the nature of salvation. In his near-death experience, he died while he was a young private in the military of pneumonia in a hospital bed. And Jesus took him to this great place of learning. He described it as being the largest library he had ever seen. He described it as being bigger than all the downtown buildings in the Washington, D.C. area, which is pretty enormous. And he said that there he saw beings, meaning people, dressed in robes. They were in this center of learning. They were studying the world's religions and science. And George Ritchie looks at Jesus and had this thought that everyone should be interested in learning things as best they can, which is going to be a little different perspective of all of us. And Jesus told him that he was right. He said, he suffered for all of us because he loves us, and that his purpose is to draw everyone to him. And Jesus told him, if you come to know me, you will come to know my Father. If you come to know me, you will come to know that love is for all people, which to me is a fascinating and true concept. George Ritchie was also taken to see a number of other places. And he finally reached a place. He went through several different realms of existence or progression, however you'd like to describe it. And in one of those, he approached this place that he said was far distant from the earth. And he saw beings that were there who, as they approached, could see Jesus, and Jesus saw them, and they felt complete joy at seeing each other. They were very much like each other. And it came to mind to George Ritchie that he was finally seeing those who were in what he would describe as something like the highest heaven, because those were people who had worked by their thoughts and actions to become like Jesus. They emanated light very much like Jesus did, and he could see them. He could see that they were beings filled with love. And it was at that point that he remembered a statement that Paul made that's recorded in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, which says, if I have the gift of prophecy, if I have the gift of faith so that I can remove mountains, but if I don't have love, I am nothing. So the greatest characteristic of God is love. The greatest characteristic we can learn, and we should learn, but the greatest characteristic of God is love. Fathers should be respected because they love their children. fathers should always work to engender their children's love towards them. And in that sense, fathers here on earth can become, through their efforts, more and more, slowly, inch by inch, line by line, precept by precept, to become more like our Father in heaven, as can we all. And so my hope on this Father's Day is that in a time when fathers tend not to be revered, that we can focus not so much on the failings of our fathers here on earth, but we can focus on the wonderful joy that becoming like our Father in heaven will bring us. Join me again next week. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. Happy Father's Day.